on great radio stations all across America. It's The National Defense with Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry.
The National Defense is made possible by Ford. Go further. By The Home Depot. More saving, more doing. And by Subway. Celebrate World Sandwich Day at Subway, Friday, November 3rd. Buy any sub and a 30-ounce drink and get another sub free of equal or lesser price. And Subway will donate a meal to Feeding America this Friday at Subway.
This is The National Defense, Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry. And Jerry, as always, our dedication.
Hey, this show's for you, the men and women serving in our military. It's for the millions of veterans out there, and it's for all their families. We're here for you. We love you. God bless you.
So, Jerry, every week we hear about, you know, folks that are transitioning out of the military.
Yes.
And it's not always a good story.
No, it's not.
And we talk to a lot of people who are having a tough time, not only with transitioning out, but getting back into the swing of things.
Right.
And initially, especially finding employment.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And I love when we can talk about somebody who has done that, not just successfully, but has really gotten to a point in their life now where they're doing some big things.
Well, I'm thinking it may have something to do with the branch of service you served on.
if you're in the Army?
Yes.
Is that what you're talking about?
I'm thinking that might have something to do
with Jeff McMillan was in the Army, and he is now the Chief Analytics and Data Officer of Morgan Stanley.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
I don't either, but it sounds fantastic.
It sounds important.
Jeff is here. How are you, Jeff?
I'm great, and thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, first of all, that's a pretty big title. What does that mean?
Candidly, the world is changing so fast, I think we're still trying to keep up with that. But essentially what I do every day is, in the world in which all of this data is piling up on the sidelines, firms like Morgan Stanley are trying to figure out how we can use it to help make better decisions for us. And what we're finding is that when you take really lots of high quality information and you put it through the right processes, and then you put it in the hands of smart, intelligent people, you tend to make better decisions than the old way we do it. And we're trying to sort of push the envelope every day in terms of how we do that.
Yeah, what type of data do you collect?
Candidly, everything. How people trade, what markets are doing, who we're calling, who we're emailing, what the response on those things are, and really trying to say, take all that information and put it through a bunch of what we call algorithms, which look at historical behaviors, and we try to predict what people might be interested in doing and what would make sense for folks, and really trying to take literally trillions of data points and bubbling it all up and then giving it, two or three things to our financial advisors, our strategic folks, to say, here are things you should be thinking about today. And then we measure the effectiveness, right? So we see, what did we recommend? Did it work? Did it not work? And then the tools that we put in place actually get smarter every day.
Hey, Jeff, I'm always very surprised, though, that in this day and age, with all the data that's out there and the ability to form those algorithms and different things, you still run into companies that have no database,
A lot of it is in some ways the technology has moved way past the infrastructure that many firms actually have available to them, right? You can put a new engine in a car, but if it still operates, on 1950s technology, it's not going to go that fast.
Yeah, that's true.
And a lot of firms have invested a lot of money over time, and just flipping the switch overnight and saying, "Hey, we're gonna move into the next decade," is actually quite challenging.
Yeah.
And candidly, it's the infrastructure that actually inhibits firms from actually leveraging some of these new and really whiz bang capabilities.
Sure, and a lot of companies, have invested a lot of money, and by the time the project's finished, well, guess what?
Right, exactly.
Man, there's something new.
So, Jeff, kind of take us through what your transition was like from the Army. I mean, you don't generally just hear about people, you come out and all of a sudden you're on Wall Street. How did that go?
Well, so first of all, I was a scout platoon leader in South Korea, and I tell people today it was the best job. And we would deploy on Team Spirit exercises, and, at the age of 24, I had, 120 young men and women who were deployed to my unit, from field artillery to aviation to snipers, the whole thing. And you know, sort of left that and ultimately got out of the military after a short stint at Fort Knox. And, you know, I showed up on the doorstep of a friend's house, you know, while I was trying to transition out. And I realized I had no idea what I was going to do. I didn't even know what my skills were coming out of the military. I mean, I knew how to work hard. I was a smart guy. But I didn't even know what the opportunities were. So what I actually did is I went back to move back into New York, moved back in with my mom and dad. And a former professor of mine at school said to me, he said, hey, you just need to reach out to as many people as you humanly possible in the military and just figure out, like, what you're even good at. Because the challenge I think a lot of people have is they understand their skills in the context of the military, but they don't know how it applies to something
sure.
else. So what I did, which was candidly great advice, and I pass this on, is, you know, talk to 200 people. Find out what they did for a living. Do they like what they did? And use your military network. And I literally reached out to hundreds of people that I had either had served with or were friends of people I had served with, and they're able to sort of say, okay, these types of jobs are really good for people coming out of the military. And you know what? These jobs are not. And helping me sort of understand where that transition is. And actually, eventually was hired by former military officer at an asset management firm, my first job. And I was essentially worked in the operations, the back office of that financial services firm, which was actually a really good transition for me because it allowed me to move from a role that was very operationally intensive in the military. I'd been in S3 at the time. And then moving over to a role that actually had a lot of similarities. Now, the content was different. And candidly, I also had a boss who understood where my skills were
right.
and then also where I needed to develop. And that was really where I got my start.
Yeah, and that's so important, too, to have somebody there that's on your side and knows what you're going through.
Absolutely. You know? And I think that's where a lot of veterans fall down
yeah.
in trying to transition is the networking aspect of it.
Well, you know, we just had – Jeff, are you familiar with an organization called Rally Point?
Yeah, absolutely. Great organization.
Yeah,
really great organization.
Just had them on a show last week, and they're making a huge difference. And they are positioning themselves to be at the right place at the right time for transitioning veterans.
Yeah.
Well, because, you know, the thing is when you go through your basic course or your advanced course, no, there's no thing on networking, right? It's almost the opposite of the military, right? You don't want to be overly showy. You don't want to, like, you know, you focus on your lane. And it's a totally different experience. And I tell people, you know, I mentor probably 10 or 15 folks coming out at any point in time, and they're always asking me, like, what's the answer? And the answer is, you know your skills, build a network of people that you can use as sort of a source and a resource, and then just keep building, right? If you talk to 5 people today, talk to 6 people tomorrow, talk to 7 people the next day, because it's a probability game, right? If you talk to 5 people, your chance of finding opportunity are X. You talk to 500, it's much better, and you really got to do that. And the military just doesn't teach you that.
Yeah, well, and the other part, too, is just like you said, in the military, you're not shining a spotlight on yourself.
No, that's the last thing you want to do.
Right,
yeah.
So, I mean, to go full circle and come back to that point where you really want to let people know what your skills are.
Yeah, and that's a problem. Especially.
Well, and also translating. The other mistake that folks make is you read their resumes and they talk about, you know, the TC-17 exercise. And you look at this stuff and nobody understands it. And, you know, actually, one of the things that I encourage people to do as well, just give your resume to somebody who doesn't know what the military is and ask them, like, do they know what you're talking about?
Right.
You know, and talk about execution and don't get so much caught up in the actual mission you did and talk more about how you led, how you solved problems. Because the thing that I want to also state is that while it can be challenging, the military gives you such skills that are so valuable in the civilian world, right? The ability to think on your feet, to develop a plan, to execute, to collaborate, to be tenacious and focused. Those are skills that you do not see oftentimes out of folks in the military, which is why, candidly, we love folks coming out of the military.
Sure.
They have that very unique set. And then you round them out with these other pieces, and they can just do such tremendous things.
I hope you're paying attention, Randy, because I possess all those things.
Yeah, sure you do.
What kind of you've succeeded at Morgan Stanley. Tell us about the corporate environment overall as it pertains to veterans at Morgan Stanley.
Well, so first of all, we have a veterans networking group. We probably have over 700 employees that are ex-military of any nature, and we also have folks that are actually not hadn't actually served on active duty, but are really affiliated maybe through a parent or a or a spouse or even a child. So we've got a terrific organization that focuses on veterans issues. And number one, we're very focused on recruiting. We want high-quality veterans. We value their contribution, and we have seen a consistent track record of folks coming out of the military with the right head on, you know, men and women who have done terrific here, and we try to do that. Secondly, we do mentorship. So every new veteran that joins the firm, if they so choose, and most choose, gets to spend a year being mentored by a managing director of the most senior level folks that actually is a former veteran, him or herself, and that's a terrific program.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Really great. And we actually have sort of formalized it. We help them set goals. We have some jargon busters. We teach them like what the words are, right? Because a lot of it's just about sort of language,
right?
And the culture as opposed to the actual work. Third area is we do a lot of work with the Department of Defense. So we've had pretty much Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine War colleges in there. I personally spent some time down at the Pentagon talking about their analytics and their strategies. We do a lot of work with different areas of the Department of Defense. Actually, we have a really great cybersecurity facility here. And we've had folks internship from the Marine Corps. We've got a gentleman here right now. Pretty much all the DODs have been in sort of looking at cyber, which, as you can imagine, is a huge, huge deal for us here at Morgan Stanley.
Yeah, and you know, cybersecurity right now, that's got to be one of the leading things that every firm has to get a strong grip on, right?
Well, absolutely. And not only that, it's the nature of the problem. This is a great place that I think military and civilian collaboration can really yield some business, because we all have the same problem. And granted, there's a different nature of threats in some cases, but the underlying technology is actually quite shareable, and it's a real terrific opportunity, because candidly, I think we're teaching the DOD some things, and candidly, they're teaching us some stuff as well. And if you look at actually the most senior folks on there, they're either coming from the Department of Defense or the NSA. So really, it's a great partnership that I think we're starting to develop here.
Hey, Jeff, it's some great information, man. I wish we had more time, but I'd like to have you back on and talk about some of the aspects of financial matters and financial problems with veterans that are transitioning out. And congratulations to you, man. Great story, great information. Jeff McMillan, the Chief Analytics and Data Officer of Morgan Stanley. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. And thanks to all the people out there who are serving us. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. We'll be right back here on the National Defense. Welcome back to the National Defense. Randy Miller, Jerry Newberry. And so coming up here in just a couple of minutes, we're going to talk to the new National Commander of the American Legion, who happens to be a female, first female National Commander. And we're going to get into it with her about what the Legion is doing with the VA and healthcare. But you were just telling me your experience with the VA. I mean,
yesterday.
And your experience has always been positive.
Yeah.
Recently.
Yeah. Years ago, I got horror stories.
Right.
But
a lot of horror stories about the VA.
I went in for my 6 month. Routine thing.
Right.
I showed up at 8. I got there at 8:30. My appointment was for 9.
Okay.
They called me in at 9:15.
Before your appointment time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went in, saw the nurse, you know, the temperature, the weight, and all that stuff. Went in immediately. Didn't have to wait. I mean, as soon as the nurse was done, right into the doctor's office. And, I've got some issues. So we talked at length.
Now, when you say at length, and this is,
she asked me, you know,
how long did you talk?
I was probably 25 minutes.
The average doctor patient conversation time is 7 minutes.
Is it really?
Yes, that is the average doctor patient time. And if you get 7 minutes with your doctor, feel lucky.
Wow.
Yeah.
So anyway, we went over all.
Wow.
Because I had blood tests done. We went over all that. I talked to her about a few concerns I had.
Right.
She scheduled me for another blood test, an echo test.
Right.
And a visit with the cardiologist. Okay, she was going to set that up.
Right.
Then I got my flu shot. I got some new prescriptions. So
were you there all day?
No. I was out of there by 20 minutes to 10. So
Wow. In less than an hour.
And that was waiting for my prescription, too. I leave there.
Right.
Got new pills. You know, I leave there, get home. I'm not home any time at all. The phone rings. It's the VA setting up my appointment time for my echo test.
With the cardiologist.
And my cardiologist. Yeah. Yeah. They want to have that test before I see the cardiologist.
Oh, right, right. Well, I can tell you, to get an appointment with a cardiologist you've never seen, right, that's going to be 6 months.
3 weeks.
Really?
3 weeks.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I also got a new blood pressure monitor that they provided me.
That you take home?
Yeah. Yeah. So I challenge anybody. I have never gone to a civilian doctor in my life.
Yeah.
And first of all, I've been called in early.
Right.
15
right.
minutes early.
Right. So you can talk.
So I can talk. So, you know, usually if you're 15 minutes after appointment time, right. you feel like you struck gold,
right.
you know, with a civilian doctor.
Let me ask you about the VA with supplements and that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Do they prescribe supplements or maybe some holistic type of treatments as well?
Well, yeah, you know, I don't know.
Okay. All right.
Because I only have my own experience to draw from.
Right.
But I know they have... Chiropractic.
Do they really?
Is okay now.
Yeah.
I think, seems to me, my old boss used to get...
Well, didn't you take care of the glasses and stuff, too?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I get free eye exam once a year and a pair of glasses every year.
Wow.
Orthopedic shoes.
Yeah, shoes.
Because
that's
one of my things. And
you know, it's great to hear a positive experience about the VA. We'll see what the American Legion has to say about healthcare here.
Sure.
Coming up next on the National Defense.
The National Defense is made possible by ADT Security. For over 140 years, your first line of defense. And by Hilton Hotels. With over 10,000 veterans and military spouses hired in the last 3 years, Hilton offers a world of opportunity. Visit jobs.hilton.com/military.
Welcome back to the National Defense. It's Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry, and this is cool. You know, we've talked to a lot of folks from the American Legion on the program, and now their new National Commander, Denise Rohan. Is that right, Rohan?
No, I'll go by anything, but my husband prefers Rowan.
Rowan. Okay, yeah. Denise Rowan. Well, it's just Commander now because...
Commander, that's right.
National Commander.
The National Commander, Denise Rowan, is with us here on the National Defense, and thank you for taking the time. This is going to be great. We got a lot of things to find out about.
Okay.
So, so how has the experience been so far in your role?
It has been amazing. So women in the American Legion, when we were founded back in 1919, women were allowed to be part of the organization because our forefathers knew that a veteran was a veteran, and it didn't matter what their race, religion, or gender was. So back in 1919, women could vote for a national commander before they could vote for president of the United States.
Wow.
So
wow.
For the last 99 years, women have been in leadership positions. It just so happens that this is the first time we have a national commander.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that a little bit, because your climb, I hate to put it in those terms, your climb to the top or your achievement, you're probably, I know if it was me, that'd be the major achievement of my life. But that's
major. Well, let me just point out right now that Jerry just retired as the assistant adjutant general to the VFW.
Okay.
So just to give you some context there.
This major thing that you've achieved, and you know, you're among a select group of people.
Absolutely.
Let's face it.
Yeah.
That could not have been an easy thing. Even though the Legion, as you stated, had a place for women through the years, you know what the culture is among veterans. We all know what that can be like. Talk to us a little bit about the challenges you may have faced being a woman.
Well, my parents raised me to believe that if you worked hard and did a good job, that you could be anything that you wanted to be. And within the American Legion, we I'll tell you, the real history is when Legionnaires came to recruit my husband about 38 years ago. They came to our house, and I identified myself as an eligible veteran for the Legion. And at that point, they told me that women joined the auxiliary.
Ah, yep.
And and about that time, we had a young son at home, and I was like, well, that's okay. I got things I can do to keep myself busy. And so my husband joined, but then a few years later, we moved to another town. And we moved to another town. The newly elected commander from that post invited me in to be an adjutant to help take notes and do the paperwork for the post. And slowly, the World War II and the Korean War veterans were welcoming me in, and they were teaching me, and me and my husband both. They were mentoring us along in all of the functions that the American Legion does and all of the good work that we do in our communities. And so slowly, I was learning more and more about the organization. And then we had a friend of ours who got elected to be a district commander, and he invited me to help on that level. And so I slowly learned more and more about the organization. So it really was working the way up from the post level, step by step. And I was the first female department commander, state commander for Wisconsin, back in 2011, 2012. And so it really was a matter of... I did my job. I did it well, and just took increment steps forward. When I was state commander for Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Legionnaires said, "Hey, we think you'd make a good national commander." So they submitted my name onto the national organization and said they were endorsing me, and my name went into a pool of possible candidates for national commander. And at that level, I was put into leadership positions on the national level. And it was sort of like a trial process of them saying, yeah, I did a good job doing this and that. And so it is quite an honor. And every so often when I think, man, this is quite an undertaking, my husband reminds me, you're one out of 2 million people.
Yeah.
You're the one that got chosen.
Yes,
and when you look at it, and I know when I look at past national commanders of any of the veteran service organizations, I'm more familiar with the Legionnaires that are national commanders. I've always held them in such high esteem, and at one point I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be a national
yeah,
commander.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy smokes, you know, but I'm still just me.
Right.
And I joined the organization because of the grassroots work we do and the things that we do in communities across this nation. And so I'm just hoping that as the first female national commander that other females will look at me, and maybe there's some women out there, women veterans who had the same treatment when they went to join the Legion 30, 40 years ago, and they're going to say, hey, I'm going to give the Legion another try because now we have a woman in leadership position. And I also know there are Vietnam-era veterans who may have gone to a post 30, 40 years ago and not felt really welcome. So
they need to get over that. As a Vietnam veteran, here's what I tell people. Hey, you know, most of those guys that said those things to you, they're dead.
Right.
They're not around anymore.
But they're either gone or they know better now.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
Well, you know, but the other thing about you, though, Denise, and we're talking to the American Legion National Commander, Denise Rowan, I think there's a couple of things there. First of all, your attitude when they told you initially that you just being the auxiliary, you didn't stomp out of the house and say, I'll have nothing to do with you. You said, OK, well, I can do that for a while, and then kind of worked your way up. Because I think and now, you know, you say you're still just me. Well, you are. But boy, what a spotlight now that you have. And immediately women, you know, we'll look to you as kind of a source of pride and inspiration. And that's a new perspective that you got to have, huh?
Exactly. And I need to tell you that the first post who told me I could join the auxiliary, when I became state commander, they put a picture of me up on the wall with a sign above it that said, she could have been a member of this post. Remember, women are veterans, too.
There you go. Wow. Good. That's a lesson for him.
That's great.
Denise, or commander, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You've taken reins of the Legion at a very crucial time.
Right.
You know, there's been a lot of discussion. There's been hearings, I think, as of yesterday on the Hill, discussions about VA healthcare and the VA healthcare system.
Yeah.
Fill us in a little bit about the Legion's position on that, because a lot of, you know, there's I think, and this is my opinion, there's some outside groups kind of interjecting themselves into this, into the VA healthcare discussion. And I think their objective is, quite frankly, to privatize VA healthcare. Fill us in a little bit on that and let us know where the Legion stands. And if, in fact, what I said is correct, if the healthcare system is being threatened.
Well, first off, the Legion is 100% opposed to privatizing the VA healthcare system. We have a program that's called System We're Saving, and it's been going on for about 12 years, that we have staff as well as volunteers that go into certain VA hospitals and check them out and talk to the whistleblowers and find out how things are going. And we do reports back to Congress every year and say, hey, these are the hospitals that are great. These are what we see positive and what we see negative. But with it said that we're 100% opposed to privatization, we need to have a way for our veterans who live in remote areas that are far away from VA facilities to get the care that they need. So there needs to be there's a line there someplace. So we definitely want our veterans to get the care that they deserve. But the VA hospital systems are fantastic systems across this nation. It's just that people are having some issues, problems getting their appointments that they need. So hopefully they can figure out the right answer to this.
I thought the choice program solved some of those.
It does, and that was where I was going to go to next. As for the last couple of years, while I've been traveling the United States, I've talked to veterans who live in rural areas who are using the choice program, but they find it very complicated. So a couple of weeks ago, I was in Washington, and I was talking to some of our legislators, and I'm like, if we could just make the choice program simpler, you know, like a one-page piece of paper that says this is what you do. Not to say that I would ever understand all the government paperwork that's involved with anything, but there's got to be an easy way for if a veteran needs care that they don't have to drive, you know, 2 or 3 hours
sure.
to get the care they need. And I know they're doing a lot of work with telehealth also, and that seems like an interesting prospect as they move forward for people in rural areas. But, yeah, we're just going to watch really close to see how the new care program is going to shake out. I know I was in northeastern Maine, and they've been using care for a couple years, and the veterans up there were happy with it, but they're a great distance from a VA facility also.
Sure. Well, the care program, very briefly, does that give a veteran the option of receiving their care at the VA facility or from a private facility? Is that what the simplistic explanation of that?
As I understand it, they would work with their VA care, the doctors or the clinic that they're working with, and with the doctors in the VA system, they would have the option if the doctor in the VA can't see them.
Gotcha.
They would have the option to go outside. But the important part then is to make sure that the records transfer in.
Uh-huh.
So that one person's not being treated by two different doctors and records aren't being kept all over the lines and stuff. So,
is it inaccurate for me to suggest that there are some groups who want to use the care program and have actually, you know, they throw the choice program in there to co-opt the healthcare system? To use that as, you know, kind of getting her foot in the door to start the process of taking the healthcare system apart.
Well, if that's their plan, they've got to fight with the American Legion.
And I know there's a lot of
VSOs that want to keep the VA system the way it is. Those hospitals... if you have a chance to go visit one and you get to talk to the staff and the doctors and the nurses and all of the volunteers who work in those programs, they are giving amazing care. And the patients in those clinics love love the care they get in the VA healthcare system.
I love the VA.
Jerry's just talking about his personal experience with the VA, and it's always been positive.
Yeah,
right?
I have not had years ago. It was a different story. Yeah. But today, I love the care I get.
Hey, we are talking to American Legion National Commander Denise Rowan. And Commander, before we leave healthcare, the American Legion has been outspoken in its at least investigation and possible support of medical marijuana for veterans with PTSD. Where is that? Where does that stand right now?
Right now, we believe that there's got to be alternative methods to treat people with post-traumatic stress or other issues. So we continue to go for, let's have trials and tests and see if it works. It just so happens that the Veterans Creative Arts Festival is going on in Buffalo, New York right now.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Part of that is all about art therapy and music therapy. And so there's all types of different ways to treat veterans for some of the issues they have or concerns that they may have. And the art therapy is very interesting. You just never know what's going to
right.
help.
Right.
Well, look, get someone through a difficult time.
Yeah. Look at the position VA had with service dogs.
Yeah,
you remember
right.
that?
We've had the latest two VA secretaries on the program. And, you know, I think the whole thing, and I think that's what you guys are talking about too at the Legion, is you just got to be open to stuff, right?
Right. Yep.
You know, because there are so many. I mean, we've had people, you know, equine therapy. I mean, there's so many different things, and you just never know what the trigger is going to be.
Fly fishing.
Yeah, right.
There's a lot of things.
Right. We're going to take a quick break here. We'll be right back with the American Legion National Commander Denise Rowan right here on the National Defense. Welcome back to the National Defense. It's Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry. And this is great, Jerry. I mean, the first female national commander for the American Legion. Is that fantastic?
That's great.
Denise Rowan is with us.
Commander?
Yes.
Capitol Hill. You know, we know, I'm not going to get into the party politics, but I know we understand, you and I understand that numbers mean something on Capitol Hill. And we know the problems involved the VSOs have with maintaining and let alone, I was going to say increasing membership, let alone just maintaining it.
Right.
Do you think that the VSO's muscle on Capitol Hill has diminished? Do you think lawmakers look at those numbers that are dwindling? And look at VSOs like they're really, you know, not something they have to worry about.
Not as impactful as they used to be.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, I believe that when it comes to patriotism and it comes to taking care of veterans, what I'm seeing on Capitol Hill is that the patriotism and taking care of veterans is trumping partisanship, and they know our numbers. And it's not, we have the American Legion, we have 2 million members, and all the other VSOs put together, they understand that our numbers all count, but you're absolutely right. The larger our number, the larger our voice. And so that's why we're trying to get as many veterans as possible to be part of the organization so that we can strengthen that voice. And a lot of times, people who are currently serving or currently serving military personnel don't realize that one day in the service gives them that veteran status.
Sure.
So there's a lot of people who say, you know, as soon as I get out, I'll join the American Legion, I'll join the VSO. But you don't have to wait till you get out. You're eligible to be part of our organization. And what all the services that we give, I know there's a lot of people waiting to pay it forward. But I'm just saying they don't have to wait. They can come now.
No, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say on that same point. I think a great message. If that is the thought process in Capitol Hill, that these VSOs are behind the times, they're not as impactful. There's when you look at the American Legion and you see the first female national commander, hey, how progressive is that?
And you can't, they can't get lulled into thinking, well, they've only got 2 million members, because those 2 million members have spouses.
Right.
They have friends, they have neighbors, they have other relatives.
That's right.
So that number is actually is transformed into something much higher. But what, you know, veterans, not all veterans, especially young veterans, you know, they're coming home trying to get their life together, raising families. Mm-hmm. A lot of them don't have time to attend meetings. And again, this is my opinion. And unfortunately, membership is synonymous with a lot of these younger veterans. That's synonymous with attending a meeting. So they, it kind of turns them off, I think.
But you definitely don't have to attend a meeting.
Exactly. So with the right use of the internet, dynamic use of the internet, there's no reason why someone can't be valuable Legion member and an active Legion member
and make a difference
and lending their voice to issues that are important.
Exactly right. That is exactly correct.
Commander, thank you so much for this time. It's just been a pleasure talking to you, and just hope you do some great things in your tenure.
And thanks for everything you're doing.
Absolutely.
You bet. And before I hang up, I need to say legion.org. You can see everything you need to know about the American Legion on our website.
There you go.
I love
Please join us.
She's even got the marketing piece.
Yep.
She's
there
on
you
it.
Go.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you so much, American Legion National Commander Denise Rowan here on the National Defense. We'll be right back.
Thanks, Randy. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you.